Welcome back to the Iron Insight. Thank you for starting your week off right with the Iron Insight. Every Monday morning at 4 a.m., I'm Bryn Welds.
And I'm Andrew Nichols with Southern Leatherworks.
And today we're sitting down with Bailey from Pizza Boy Metalworks. How's it going?
It's going real well. How are you boys doing?
Pretty good.
Doing all right.
Waiting for some snow?
Yeah, not me, though. It's trees are still green down here in Florida. Figured I'll let y'all know.
I don't want to hear it.
You're in Pennsylvania, right?
Yes, sir. It was supposed to be, it was weird this week. Thursday was like 55 degrees or 50 degrees. And then they were like, oh yeah, it's going to be 60 degrees on Friday. It was not 60 degrees on Friday. It was like 35 yesterday with like 50 mile an hour winds. It was brutal.
Man, where at in Pennsylvania are you?
I'm in Manheim. I'm about 25 minutes from Hershey, 35 minutes from Harrisburg. So it's Lancaster County. It's like the middle of Amish country.
Gotcha. Well, that's like where Shane Gillis is from.
Yeah, Shane's from Mechanicsburg. He's like from like 45 minutes away.
Gotcha.
So everybody here loves Shane, whether you love him or hate him. So
are you from Pennsylvania originally?
I am. I am Manheim, born and raised. My early 20s, I moved out to Pittsburgh for 4 or 5 years, and then I moved back to Manheim like right before the pandemic, and I've just kind of been here ever since. Not a bad place to live. It's just cold.
How did you get started in the metalworking?
This is a good question. So I was really good at school, and I hated school. I think that goes for pretty much everybody in the trades. There's a lot of people that were really good academically and just didn't have the attention span for it or knew they could do better doing something else other than sitting in a classroom. So I was looking for any way out of school. And I'm glad that the culture is starting to shift, that they're pushing trade schools more. But when I was in school, it was always, you're going to go to college and get a 4-year degree. You might go on and get a master's, a doctorate, whatever. I was like, I'm not doing another 4, 6, 8 years of school. So the shop teacher at my high school, his son went to the local trade school, which is Thaddeus Stevens College of Technology. To my knowledge, it's still only open to Pennsylvania residents, but it's a very good school. They have a very, very high graduation rate and a very, very high job placement rate. I ended up graduating there with 4 or 5 job offers when I was 19 years old. But anyway, back how I got into it, I knew nothing about machining, nothing about metalworking. I had welded a little bit, but not anything crazy. It was like an intro to welding class that I took in high school. And the shop teacher was like, yeah, my son's going for this machining program. You should go check it out. So I was in my junior year. I'm like, okay, well, it's a day that I can skip school because I'm going on a college visit. So it was a way out of school. So we went down and toured this school, and the professor at the time was actually from my hometown. And he's like, oh, so you're coming next year? And I was like, no, I'll be a senior next year. And he's like, that's not what I asked. He's like, you can do dual enrollment. And that was the end of that. I was like, yep, hell out of there. So ended up going for that. There was a bunch of politicking and stuff included with that, because I had to get the school board to sign off on dual enrollment and whatever. Once the school board signed off on it, we were off and running. I had like 4 or 5 other kids that I went to high school with ended up doing dual enrollment with me just to get out of school. So that was a good deal, because with that dual enrollment, they knocked off half of your tuition for your freshman year. So, and because it's a 2-year program, you ended up graduating high school and then graduating college in consecutive years. So that's how I got into, and then I got into it and I just really enjoyed it. I did a lot of 3D modeling and design work when I was in high school. It all blends together into the CAD and the CAM and all of that. So that's how I got into it, and I like it. So that's why I'm still doing it, I guess.
So you didn't have like anybody in your family that kind of pointed you in that direction? You just kind of picked it up?
No, my mom worked for the school district that I went to as a like an administrative assistant. And then my dad was a truck driver the whole time when I was growing up. So I come from a pretty blue collar family. My grandfathers were both, one of them was like a maintenance mechanic or something. I'm not real sure. Don't talk to that side of the family. And then my other grandpa was a jack of all trades. I was very close with him before he passed, but he was in sales at one point. He was a truck driver at one point. He was a mechanic and a maintenance guy. And that's where I get a lot of my mechanical inclination from was I spent a lot of time with him when I was growing up. And it's just that curiosity of taking things apart, figuring out how they work, putting it all back together. And that's how I got into doing, like, I was racing motocross when I was growing up. So then I was like, oh, well, I can rebuild my own engines and stuff like that. And it was, I don't remember who said it, but they were like, well, you could make your own like dirt bike parts if you got into machining. And I was like, yeah, okay. So that's how I justified going to school for it.
Gotcha. What was the, like, the degree that you got from the school?
The degree, it's an associate's degree. The program has changed so much, and I'm going to actually shout the school out here. Thaddeus Stevens, if they could find a way to open that school up to people who are outside of Pennsylvania, it would do so much good for the trade and the industry, because it's a trade school. It's not just a machining school. They have HVAC, they have welding, they have plumbing, they have electrical. There's a whole list of stuff. If you want to do your research, you can look the school up. But when I was there, the program has changed so much. So to answer your question, I got an associate's in machine tool and computer-aided manufacturing. Now it is, I think it's an associate's of CIM, which is computer integrated manufacturing. When I was there, you started out your freshman year, everything was all manual machining. And then you started to dabble in CNC a little bit at the end of the year. And then your entire second year was MasterCam and like CNC programming, setup, running. From what I understand now, the program is pretty much all CNC. Like, they start you out with a little bit of manual stuff, but because of the way the industry has gone and manual stuff, just there's a place for it in tool room stuff and maintenance and whatever else. But it's, as far as production and just the efficiency, everything is CNC anymore. So it's mostly CNC. The way that they sold it to get everybody to come when I was going was, oh, we're getting a brand new shop. We're going to have all these new machines, whatever. And you're probably going to have that your second year. They opened the shop like 3 or 4 years after I graduated. No harm, no foul. It was a good marketing program. When I started the year before me, they only had one freshman class and then one sophomore class. And then the year that I started, it might've been my second year. When I was there, there was a daytime class, like for my freshman year, and then that was it. And then my sophomore year, they had two freshman classes. They had a daytime class and a nighttime class, and I think that's how it still is. Like, they used to have a wait list that was a mile long to get into that program, and they said the only way that we can get around this is hire more instructors and professors and, you know, double up. So there were people in the shop all day and all night. I mean, I'm not sure what their numbers look like these days, but when I was there, we started with 28 or 29 people in the program my freshman year, and when we graduated 13. So it is a program that will chew you up and spit you out. I felt fairly prepared when I, you know, ended up graduating and working full time.
That's kind of crazy. It sounds like the school that Andrew and I went to didn't have a machining or tool making program, but the campus 20 minutes away did. And now I work at a tool and die shop with like 60 tool makers and mold builders. And then there's two of us welders. But yeah, cool. Like,
what school did y'all go to?
It was a community college here in Nebraska called Central Community College.
Okay. Well, they had a really good, I mean, their welding program was massive. It could have stood by itself for their welding program. So it was pretty jam up for a community college, no doubt.
And then the machining program there is a Haas accredited something. So like the Gene Haas Foundation donates like $100,000 each year or some crazy.
I'm really glad you brought that up. So when I was at Stevens my freshman year and my sophomore year, they had a couple Haas machines, but not a whole lot. When they built this new shop, they got all new equipment. And I mean, they have a Herco or two, and they have like a Swiss machine. But Haas actually, when they do their like factory outlet demo days, they actually do a lot of them out of Thaddeus Stevens' shop because they have so many machines in there. And it's like they have the Gene Haas naming rights grant or whatever. I'm not sure how much money they get for that, but it's called like the Gene Haas Learning Laboratory or whatever. And Haas Automation paid for more of my education than I did. I think all said and done, degree was like $10,500 between the 2 years. I don't know what it costs now, but it used to be $3,700 a semester, and they knocked off a semester my freshman year. So it was like $10,500 plus tools and books. And I think I got a couple little scholarships coming out of high school, but because of the one class that I took in high school, when I applied for the Gene Haas scholarship, I had that on my transcript from high school. They gave me an extra $500. So my freshman year, they gave me $2,500. And then I applied for it again my sophomore year just to see what would happen. They gave me another $2,000. So they paid $4,500 of my education. I think I paid $4,100 out of my own pocket after all of my other scholarships and everything. So all of my equipment is Haas. They've been very good to me. They're very good to work with. You'll get on the internet and people, oh, those are junk machines. Oh, it's always people that don't own any machines of their own that are telling me that. But they've been very good to me. They've made me a lot of money. They've worked. I don't know. I have nothing bad to say about Haas.
Yeah, we probably have like 25 Haas machines and then a couple others. But yeah, I don't know. They all the tool makers seem to have a hard on for them. So
they're very easy to work with. I like that the control is the same. Doesn't matter which machine you go to. If I go to my mill or I go to my lathe, the control panel, everything's in the same place. I know where to go in the settings and parameters when I need to find something. Now they have a tooling website. You can go on there and buy all of your end mills, your lathe inserts, tooling, fixturing, whatever. It all ships next day. It's cheaper than anywhere else you're going to find it online. Like, they have the market cornered as far as like the tooling and fixturing stuff goes. I think their machines are great, and it's American manufactured. What else could you really ask for?
Right. So you're full time on your own right now with your business. Before, no, sir. Oh, no?
Not yet. Gotcha. It feels like I am because I work nonstop, but no, I have. I still have a day job, but go ahead, finish your question. I'm sorry.
But what's the kind of difference in the work that you do with your own business compared to your day job then?
Okay, so this is a good question. I Andrew leaned on a little bit of this at PRI.
It's a lot.
So my whole thing with Pizza Boy Metalworks is billet motorsports solutions. So whether that's AN fittings, whether that's, I do a fair amount of end tanks for like air to water intercoolers or oil coolers, stuff like that. Shout out to Pat at Old Boys Fabrication, because Pat is the one that, you know, kind of taught me how to do that, because I was asked to do one. And if you follow Pat on Instagram, he does the most gorgeous end tanks. He and I have followed each other for years and like message each other back and forth. You know how it goes. And he posted these and somebody hit me up about doing them. And I hit him up. I was like, hey man, somebody asked me to make these and I have no idea what I'm doing as far as fixturing or any of that. And I was like, look, I don't want to blow up your spot. I don't want to take your trade secrets. So I'll sub them to you if you just want to do them. And he's like, no, man. He's like, you're not going to tell anybody how you do this, but this is how I do it. So big shouts to him for helping out with that. But no, with Pizza Boy, I try to focus on the motorsport stuff. There have been a lot of local industrial companies hitting me up recently for just small batch production and maintenance work or replacement parts. And I have a really hard time saying no to people. So, and I mean, you guys know how it goes. If somebody's going to wave some money in front of your face and they're going to say, hey, this work doesn't have any tight tolerances on it. So it's mostly fabrication parts, doesn't have tight tolerances on it. My deadline is whenever you get it done, we're going to supply our own material and this is what we're willing to pay. I'm like, yeah, okay, drop it off. Like I'm booked out probably 4 to 6 weeks right now, which I'm very blessed for, because
awesome. Yeah, that's huge.
I'm trying to get a bigger backlog than that because, you know, the end game is for me to quit my day job. But touching on that, the last 5.5 years, I was at a local company and I was just hired as a machinist there. And I think they very quickly realized that I was ambitious. They knew that I wanted to go out on my own. And I had sold my house in Pittsburgh, so I was sitting on a little bit of money. They started talking about buying a water jet and then they started dragging their feet. And I approached the owner of the company, but his operations manager at the time was his son-in-law. I approached the owner of the company. I said, look, if we're not going to buy this water jet, I'll buy it and you guys can lease it from me. And he's like, oh, yeah, that's funny. And when I say local company, it was probably 25, 30 employees at the time. So it's not like it was a huge corporation that I'm like, hey, I'll bankroll this for you. So I'm like, hey, I'll buy this machine. And he's like, yeah, that's cute. And his son-in-law pulled him aside and he's like, no, like he's sitting on some money from selling his house and he doesn't want it just sitting there. I think he's dead serious about doing this. So then they end up moving their feet. They bought this machine. But I ran into a buddy of mine. I was back out in Pittsburgh for a weekend, and a buddy of mine had started and built and then eventually sold it to a private equity firm, a pretty large motorsports company. They're pretty well known in the Honda scene, and they used to do a lot of Subaru stuff and Nissan stuff too. But I ran into him, and he's like, hey, man, how's it going? Like, I heard you left the city. Is everything cool? I'm like, yeah, everything's cool. Got a new job. And he's like, oh, cool. What are you doing? I told him, and I told him I was going to buy this water jet, and he pulls me aside. He's like, look, don't do that. He goes, I got a Haas mini mill sitting in a storage unit. It's not making me any money. It's actually costing me money for it to sit there. Come get it. So that was my first CNC machine. It was a Super Mini 2. He's like, I got a fourth and fifth axis indexer for it. So I start looking stuff up, and he's telling me all the options that are on this machine. So I'm like, okay, this is like $115,000 worth of equipment if I buy it brand new. So I'm like, all right, what do you want? He goes, bring me 15 in cash and we'll call it even. I'm like,
I'm on my way. I'm there yesterday. Yeah. I'm going to the bank. We're putting it in a U-Haul.
I'll be on my way. So I end up buying this, and then the Superman, I don't want to bore everybody with this, but the mini mills are single phase machines and the super mini mills are three phase machines. I do not have three phase at my home shop. And I do not have enough juice to run a phase converter to then run the machine.
Nope.
So it sat in my shop for a good 6 months. And in the meantime, I was approached. There were two of us in the machine shop at work. In the meantime, I was approached about swapping positions with the other guy and being his boss. I'm like, yeah, okay. So now I'm running the machine shop. So then not a whole lot of time went by and I get pulled aside by the owner and the new operations manager. And I guess the new operations manager was approached about buying the majority of the company. And then he approached me about being his partner to buy the other 40% of the company. And I'm like, yeah, okay. So I'm like, well, what am I doing with all of my equipment? They knew that I had bought equipment, knew I intended on going out on my own. And they're like, well, why don't you just bring it up here, use it as leverage in your buyout? Okay. So they send the truck to the house. Dropped off a forklift, like rented a forklift. They ended up backing the forklift through the wall of my shop while it was here. It was a whole thing. Great. It was. So we get the machine up there. We get it under power. We start using it. No harm, no foul. While we're negotiating this deal for me to buy a 40% of this company, the majority owner has a massive heart attack and falls over dead. So now my equipment is in their shop. We have no contract. We have no written agreement on any of this. And now everybody's scrambling to figure out what's going to happen. So I ended up walking away from the negotiation table for reasons I don't need to get into on here. And this past August, one of our clients, when I was there, one of our clients was a local company that they do a lot of industrial pump repair. And they literally half a mile up the street from the shop, they called me. They're like, hey, can you come measure this job for us? I'm like, yep, I'll be there. And I was just in a mood. I don't remember what was going on. I walked into the shop and I was like, are y'all hiring? And they're like, yeah, when can you start? Like, we'll help you push your toolbox up the street. So I work on industrial pumps now. Which has been a huge blessing because now I don't machine all day every day. So then it makes it fun when I come home from work and it's not a chore for me to, you know, spend another 4 or 5 hours in the shop. But sorry, yeah. That was a long-winded response for a very simple question.
Have you ever done any kind of like mold building work or in school? Did you have to like hand polish and shit?
I've done when I was at this previous company, I had done, I'll try and find pictures. I'll send them to you. I mentioned we're in Amish country. So the Amish love fiberglass, like making molds to make fiberglass parts, because a lot of people don't realize that the Amish horse and buggies are like 90% fiberglass. They're super lightweight. So they approached us about making this mold. And of course, this mold versus like the mold making that your tool and die guys are doing are completely, there's no tolerances on these fiberglass parts for the Amish because they're measuring everything with a tape measure. But we made a mold for like the yoke that like connects to the horse. So it was, I think, 9 pieces. And that was actually one of the first jobs that we ran on the Haas when I got it in there. Before I took the Haas up to their shop, they had all ProtoTrack equipment and a manual lathe. And it was good equipment, but you're really limited in what you can do. And of course, this mold that they were making was, it had a lot of weird like 3D contours and compound angles and stuff. We wouldn't have been able to do it without that Haas. So it was kind of a blessing that I bought that and then it ended up in their shop because I don't know how they would have accomplished it otherwise. But no, to answer your question, I haven't done any like super tight tolerance mold work.
I was just wondering because like I know the welding program at the school that we went to was like, you know, pretty loose, like come and go. Andrew's driving through the ditch to merge onto the highway, like right next
with
to
my
the
professor
school.
Behind me.
Yeah. And then I know the machining program is ran like the fucking military. And so sometimes when welding gets slow, they'll send me over to them to polish molds. And they always tell me like, if it's a clear plastic, if the end part is a clear plastic, then they have to polish to a mirror finish by hand. And I can't stand polishing. So I can't even imagine that shit.
There's an art to it for sure. And when I worked in Pittsburgh, the guy that I worked for had kind of a similar, it's weird how like now all these years later, I'm living the same story that he was living. Like he left this company that I don't remember if the company failed or closed or whatever, but they told him like he had already bought his own machines and was doing stuff in the evenings and weekends, and the company was closing and they basically were like, yeah, all this work, that's all you. So it was all like glass mold work for like Pyrex and other companies like that. And they were hand polishing everything because glass and plastic are the same as far as like it'll show any imperfections. We still did a fair amount of that work when I was there. And we had one guy that did 9% of the polishing because that's what he did when they worked at the other company. And he was very good at it. And he liked that he could come in the morning and he could set up a long run on the lathe or mill, whatever he was doing. And then he could just sit there and polish for 8-10 hours a day. And more power to him because I had to help him a couple times. And I was like, man, I cannot wait until this job leaves.
Yeah. It's like mind numbing.
Yeah.
Constantly. Yeah.
I think you told me that you still go into your old place of work where your machines are at to do work as well.
Yeah. So they ended up buying that machine from me when I left. So thankfully, like it's a whole thing and I don't want to badmouth the company because they've been very good to me, but there's a reason I left. And every time I cross through that door frame, I remember why I left. But I ended up buying a larger mill that also was there and they bought both of them from me in the last year and a half. But when I left, they went like 6 weeks without a machinist. They hired a new machinist. I was still buying all of my material from them. So the one day they called me and said, hey, your material's here. I showed up to buy it. And the co-owner of the company that I was supposed to buy out was like, hey, we got this job. You've done it like 4 or 5 times. Can I ask you a question on it? I'm like, absolutely, whatever you need. Because I told them when I left, anything I can do to help this transitional period go smoothly, let me know. If you need me to come help you do stuff, if you need me to help you train whoever you hire, if you need to sub work to me, whatever, like we'll work with it. And they're like, yeah, okay, thanks. And then radio silence for like 2 months, whatever. So I go in, he asks me a question on this drawing. He goes, all right, that's what I thought, but I just wanted to confirm with you. So he goes out to the shop and explains this to the machinist that they had hired, and he starts flipping shit. He starts yelling at the owner of the company and you guys don't trust me. You got to call Bailey to ask this, and would not look at me, barely shook my hand. I'm like, whatever. This is a you problem. I'm just here to buy my material and leave. So they call me the next morning. Well, the fab shop manager, who is one of my really good friends, calls me the next morning and goes, hey, what happened after I left yesterday? And I explained, and he goes, all right, cool. So the owner comes in. And he goes, what happened after I left yesterday? And his story matched mine. The guy had no called, no showed because he was so pissed off about whatever. So they ended up firing him. So then they call me later in the day. They're like, hey, can you stop down here? Hey, that job that we had a question about yesterday, that's yours if you want it. So that's currently sitting in my shop. I got to deliver those parts Monday. But then like a week goes by and they call me again. They're like, hey, we have machine work for you to quote if you want it. So I'm like, okay. So I go down and I look at it. I'm like, all of this stuff is too big to fit in my machine. And they just kind of looked around and they're like, our shop's sitting here idle if you want to come do it after hours. So now I've been going down and doing all of the same work that I was previously doing for, you know, twice the money that I was making when I was there. But it's not really about the money. I do want to help them out and I do want to see them thrive, but it's hard because they've kind of backed themselves into a weird corner where they're having trouble hiring and having trouble competing in the marketplace. And that's unfortunate, but yeah, it's been real weird and real good because like when I quit, I was going to make a post on Facebook like, hey, if you need machine work, like I'm no longer here, but here's my number. And I didn't even have the opportunity to make that post because people just started banging my door down. They're like, hey, we heard you're like kind of doing this on your own now. So what's the deal? And I'm busy, so I'm happy. And it's been good.
Yeah, 4 to 6 weeks out is pretty good, man, for any business owner. I don't care what you do.
Yeah, I'm having a good time. So that's all that matters. That's awesome.
There's something that seems so unique to tool and die shops, like about the ownership. I don't know if this is universal, but with your story and then like the current five owners of the company that I work at all started off as cleaning kids is what we call it. So you start as a cleaning kid if you're going through that tool and die program. And then they all bought ownership in. The most recent two were like a couple months ago they bought ownership in because the current owners are kind of on their way out within like the next 10, 20 years. But yeah. And then there's been like five businesses, successful shops around us that all the owners previously worked as tool makers and then split off on their own and started their own company. But they do some work for us and we do some work for them. I don't know if that's a universal thing in the tool and die world, but
it's a weird thing because it's like you're saying, it you are correct. Like everybody seems to have come out of like the same three or four shops at one point, and they just kind of all split one way and they all end up weaving their way back to doing work for one another. And I don't know, it's I won't quote something that I know that one of my friends quoted. Like it's just kind of a gentleman's agreement, I guess. And that's
That's, or you'll quote triple. That way they go back to your buddies.
Well, that's, yeah, I've done that already too. So
yep, do that a lot.
Well, that's, I love that because like if there's not an NDA on something, we all talk. If my buddy owns a shop and I own a shop and neither one of us sign an NDA, we're, hey, I quoted this for so-and-so. Well, then you'll have the customer call me and they're like, yeah, well, I had this other shop quote this and the guy's kind of an asshole and he quoted me this. And I'm like,
yeah, he's an asshole. He's my best friend. He's a real asshole. Let me show you how bad of an asshole I am. Yep.
I quoted it double. I'm not telling them that I know what he quoted it at. I quoted it double, and then he'll call me, and he's like, yeah, now they're saying you're an asshole. And I'm like, yeah, whatever.
Pick an asshole.
It's a really small world, and it's, I mean, I'm sure you see it as well, because like I'm mainly talking to Andrew here, but it seemed like everybody that I talked to at PRI also knew Andrew.
Yep. I was telling him about it when we were talking about Austin Hill.
Yeah, Austin Hill's local to me. So, okay, funny story here. I love Austin to death. Austin was working, when I met Austin, he was working for the guy that sold me my first Haas machine.
Okay, yeah.
So that's how I know Austin. And then he and Austin went out on their own and built Austin Innovations. That's so much fun to watch them continue to grow because they're killing.
Absolutely. Yeah, they are doing very good. So
you and Austin have a lot of similar like mannerisms or the way you speak.
Yeah, that's
it's the Amish country part of them.
Yeah, that's the Pennsylvania.
You ship a lot of your parts in pizza boxes, don't you? Have I seen a video of that? Yeah, I thought that was badass. Can you tell us about that a little bit?
Okay, so I started telling Bryn this before we started recording, but I used to have a brand called Horsepower and Pizza. I still have the brand. I just don't really do a whole lot with it anymore. It started as a YouTube channel, and then we got into a podcast, and just kind of, it kind of fell off a couple years ago. I was going through some stuff in my personal life, and I was in the middle of starting Pizza Boy Metalworks, and, you know, I had to put the energy and the time and effort into what mattered, and that was Pizza Boy. So I started, when I had horsepower and pizza, I would ship t-shirts and hats and anything that would fit in like a small pizza box. That's how I would ship my stuff. And I can always tell who has never spent a dime with either of my businesses, because I'll get messages on Instagram all the time like, hey, man, I have a great idea for you. You should ship your stuff in pizza boxes. And I'm like,
no shit.
Never been on my website before. So, yeah, the pizza boxes, like, I do a lot of cantilever suspension rockers. They're billet. They're a universal. It's like the bell crank for the cantilever. They're actually a part that I do for Sideways Fab out of Colorado. He designed them. I make them. They sit on my shelf. He sells them on his website, and then I drop ship them when he gets orders. So
there you go.
He never touches them. Excuse me. So they fit perfectly in. I have 7-inch pizza boxes and 10-inch pizza boxes. They fit perfectly in a pizza box because they're just the right depth, and then you can get enough packing paper in around them that they don't clank together. And it's just, I think it's a nice touch, and it's, I don't know, they're easy, they're cheap. Like, when you buy cardboard boxes to ship stuff, cardboard boxes are more expensive than anybody really thinks yep. about. But you can go to a restaurant supply store, and you can buy like 100 pack of pizza boxes for like $8. So
that's pretty good. Yeah. I just bought 250 boxes and just got reamed over it. So,
yeah, I mean, Uline's going to ream you any way you can, if that's where you're buying shipping stuff from. But
yeah,
I mean, $8 for 100 of them. That's probably, I don't know. I don't look at things. So it's probably more than $8, but you know what I mean? Like, they're still very cheap. Because they're meant to be thrown out when you're done with, they're a consumable yeah. for the pizza shop. So, the pizza box, I'm pretty proud of that. And it's a shame that, you know, I'll probably end up getting some custom boxes made that still look like a pizza box, but are like deeper and a little bit wider for some of the bigger stuff that I ship. But yeah, anything small, it generally goes in a pizza box.
I just thought it was funny because I was scrolling through TikTok, and then, like, you're packaging a part, and I'm like, I'll be damned. He's actually putting it in a pizza box. Okay, right on, man, right on. That was funny.
I don't know if I'd be hyped that my parts had arrived or pissed that there was no pizza. Yeah.
It's funny because I'm sure it confuses the hell out of a lot of people, because when you go on Sideways Fab to buy those bell cranks, I think it says in the description, like, hey, they're made in Pennsylvania by Pizza Boy Metalworks, but it's not in like bold print. And my logo used to be laser engraved on them, but now we just a private label. So they're just anodized black, press the bearings in them, ship them out. So I'm sure people are super confused when they order Sideways Fab and a box shows up, a pizza box shows up. It says Pizza Boy Metalworks, and they're like, I didn't order anything from these people. And then they open it and they're like, oh yeah, okay. But yeah, I have fun with it. I hope it makes everybody else laugh or at least smile when they get it. Cause it's just little details like that I would appreciate that. I don't know. I'm weird though. So
where did the name come from? Are you just like a big pizza guy or?
Big pizza guy. So when I was in trade school, man, my cat is knocking on the door trying to get in the office. I was going to let her in, and I was like, no, she's going to be all over the place. Sorry, I don't know if this is a video podcast or not. Andrew's holding his cat for those of you just listening on audio. So when I was in trade school, we had a Little Caesars around the block, and we were all poor college kids. So we ate Little Caesars for lunch almost every day because they did the like $4 lunch combo or $5 lunch combo, whatever it was. And I had a Subaru BRZ at the time when I was in school, and somebody said something about horsepower and pizza one day, and that's how that name stuck. Like, he only cares about horsepower and pizza or something like that. And I was like, no, we're gonna use that. So that started, and then because of the connections that I made through horsepower and pizza, that's how I ended up meeting the guy that Austin used to work for that ended up selling me the machine. So it just kind of all snowballed into Pizza Boy Metalworks. And it's one of those things where, like, I could have just been Shank Machine Works or like something basic like that, where it's just my last name and machine or last name and design and whatever. It would have worked out, but Pizza Boy Metalworks makes you Google it. You know what I mean? That's like a what? That makes no sense. Funny story there. So the first year I went to SEMA was 2023, and I didn't have my account like set up with SEMA, my EIN and all of my, to prove that I'm a business, because SEMA is a little harder to get into than PRI. And I'm sure PRI is going to get harder to get into because it's owned by SEMA, but it was harder to get passes. So Matt Sixbury at Sideways Fab was like, look, I'm just going to put you down as an employee because you're a contractor of mine and I'll get you a pass. No questions asked. So they asked for a pay stub and a business card and all sorts of shit. So Matt makes all this stuff. He's never had anybody get declined for passes. And I hope that me saying this on a podcast isn't going to blow up his spot and make it hard. But I got to tell the story because he sends my shit through and he made a business card. And on my job title, he put metal surveillance. I'm like, they're never going to buy this. Cards in Microsoft Word with Comic Sans MS font. So it looks super unprofessional and just whatever. So they shut that down immediately. So he went to try to get my pass again. Whoever is in charge of credentials at SEMA searched me on Facebook and saw that I own Horsepower and Pizza and Pizza Boy Metalworks. And they sent Matt an email saying he is declined because he owns a pizza shop. He has no business being at a motorsports trade show. So I'm like, I don't own a pizza shop yet. Give it time, maybe.
Could be, no.
Yeah, so that, I just find that funny all the time.
That is like, funny.
Yeah, they didn't want me at SEMA because I own a pizza shop, apparently. But yeah, it all just kind of, it started with Horsepower and Pizza and snowballed from there.
Well, we got about 43 minutes of good footage. Here's one question that we ask every guest before we end each episode. What is your favorite genre of music to listen to while you work or will?
Oh, man, I'm so glad you asked this. So one of my previous jobs, so the last job that I had, the company that I still do work for, they are mostly a weld shop and a fab shop. So I was the only machinist there. So I never had to weld. So when I was at the company before that, I was one of the only people that kind of knew how to weld. I will never call myself a welder, but I can make things stick together. And I knew they would ask me to do it. And I don't really particularly like welding. So I would play Taylor Swift while I was welding so they would stop asking me to weld. But
oh, that's awesome.
Right now, my music taste is all over the place. I'll listen to pretty much anything. And right now I'm on like a big podcast kick. So I'll put in AirPods and go out in the shop and just listen to Andy Frisella tell me I'm a bitch for like 9 hours at a time. It's working so far, but I don't know. We go through phases. I'm not a big 80s guy, but we'll go through phases where we'll have like hair bands on, or we'll go through phases where it's like Biggie and Tupac, or I mean, you get Lil Wayne or Gucci Mane or something on, and I'm out in the shop dancing and rapping along, and I listen to a lot of rap, so I'd probably say rap.
Well, we appreciate your time. We appreciate you coming on. We'll have your social links or website link, whatever, in the show notes for all the listeners who are interested in following Pizza Boy Metalworks. Like I said, we really appreciate your time. For all the listeners, hit the review on whatever listening platform that you are listening on and give us an honest one, whether it's 1 star or 5 stars. The Everlast link in the show notes for the upgraded Nova Torch and foot pedal, free of additional charge with any order of a TIG-capable machine, and Edge Welding Cups link as well. And with Bokomol FR, you can use code BRIN for $3 off every $30 you spend. And Andrew?
And you can check out sunleatherworks.net for any and all custom welding hoods or leather products. We got belts, we got glove lanyards, everything else. So go ahead and check it out. Mr. Bailey with Pizza Boy Metalworks, we appreciate you coming on. It was nice meeting you at PRI, and hopefully I'll get to come on your podcast soon.
Yeah, I appreciate you boys having me, and I had a lot of fun. Thanks for having me. And yeah, I'm sure we'll link up. We'll get on another podcast here shortly.
Absolutely. Thank you, man.